adventure has a name. It must be Indiana Jones.
This is serious!
From Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
You don't believe me. You will, Dr. Jones.
Podcast. I am your host, Scott White, and I have two special guests with me this time. I have Mr. Miguel Sanchez and Mr. Edward Ball. Thank you guys for joining me.
What's up? Thanks for having us.
Now, just a little behind the curtain, Miguel and I, we attempted to do this podcast last week, and we had a bunch of audio problems, so we couldn't use the audio, so we're doing it again, sort of like a marriage that's in trouble. To keep the spontaneity, we're bringing in a third person, and that's Ed. So Ed's right. Going to get spontaneity in this podcast.
I'm the child that comes in.
Yeah.
halfway through a marriage.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll say that. Have either of you? I'll start with Miguel. From last time, you said that you were not really familiar. And by the way, I tricked both you guys. This is a Dan Aykroyd film, but he's in the movie for like 45 seconds.
Yeah, if that, you know what I mean? I think it was less than that.
It might have been less than that.
When Miguel told me it was the Temple of Doom you guys were talking about, I was like, I don't think Dan Aykroyd's in that movie. And I've seen it so many times, and of course I do know like when he comes in, but it just didn't occur to me that that would be the reason we were watching it, but no complaints.
It took me several viewings to realize that that was Dan Aykroyd.
Ah, Dr. Jones, I'm R. Weber. I spoke with your assistant. We've managed to secure three seats, but there might be a slight inconvenience as you will be riding on a cargo full of live poultry.
Is he kidding?
Madam, it's the best I could do at such short notice. Heavens, aren't you Willie Scott, the famous American female vocalist?
Oh, yeah, Jen!
Okay, so Ed, you said you've seen this before. So are you familiar with the Indiana Jones character and the Indiana Jones movies?
Yes, very much so. The Temple of Doom, in fact, was the very first one that I saw as a kid growing up. So I always thought this was like the first Indiana Jones. I saw it out of order. I saw this one first, and then I saw The Last Crusade, and then I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then when I saw The Last Crusade, because it starts with him as a young kid, I thought, oh, this must be the very first Indiana Jones. So it was like a weird cycle, but then I got it figured out in my teens.
You know what? I will say, though, like, the whole franchise, like, the timeline of the franchise or the movies, like, it is kind of like this wackadoo order, like, Temple of Doom is meant to be, like, a prequel to the first one, and then, like, the last one is, like, before and after. It's, like, a lot to keep up timeline-wise, so as a child, I would imagine that would be very confusing.
Yeah. And the last two, or rather, the first one and the last one focus on Nazis, where, as the second one, there are no Nazis, so I also thought it led into the World War, and that's why we started seeing Nazis a lot more. Again, thinking Temple of Doom was the first one, but there you go.
I also realize neither one of you are acknowledging Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've seen that movie. That was that was the very first Indiana Jones movie I saw, was King of Crystal Skull. And I was already not interested in seeing the Indiana Jones movies. We got dragged to this movie, and I thought it was real dumb. I was like, wow, this is what everyone's so hyped about. But finally, I sat down and I watched at least the first two recently. And I have to say, I kind of get it. The second one especially has been my favorite so far.
But so you haven't seen, what's the third one, Ed?
The Last Crusade.
You have not seen The Last Crusade?
Not yet, but I'm planning on it. You know, I watched the first two, so I figure I'll get the third one. And then probably go back and watch the fourth one, but just because I like Shia LaBeouf.
Dan Aykroyd's in this movie for like 30 seconds or something. Ed, you being an Englishman yourself, what did you think of Dan Aykroyd's... Was it an English accent he was doing?
I think it sounded like a Dan Aykroyd... It sounded like a Dan Aykroyd trying to do an accent. It was just so... And I mean, his dialogue is so quick. He's just like, and he's yelling over a plane. It mostly just sounds like Dan Aykroyd. You know what I mean? Like, having gone back and watched it now, like, looking for Dan Aykroyd, I was just like, yeah, that's him. Like, no mistaking. But, yeah, it seems so, well, I guess it makes sense. It's just like one of those cameos that you'd expect to see in a Steven Spielberg movie, I guess.
I read that he and Spielberg were friends, and, like, I think, Scott, you were telling me last week that he and Spielberg did a movie together.
Yeah, yes. 1941, right?
Yes, he directed 1941, and Steven Spielberg also had a cameo in The Blues Brothers. So, yes, they did have a previous working relationship. Now, and speaking of English accents, Ed, this is something... Whenever I watch a TV show or movie where there's an Englishman in America and they speak to an American, the American always answers back in a fake, over-the-top English accent. Does that run? Do you run into that in everyday life?
I mean, yeah, honestly. It's like a constant barrage of, you know, as soon as people realize that's what you talk. I could go on a huge tangent on examples of random examples of people who just pick up on it and then quickly decide that it's an opportunity for them to stretch their linguistics and their accents, you know. And it's usually terrible, sometimes offensive, but because like a lot of people just instantly go, "G'day, mate." It's like, that's the wrong country.
We're not even close.
Not even close. But, so, it is a thing. Absolutely.
What was your guys' both overall take of this movie? Miguel, we'll start with you first. What was your overall... Because you said you watched Raiders of the Lost Ark first, and then you watched this one, and you said that you enjoyed this one better than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I did. So I watched the first two back-to-back because I wanted to have, like, context going into the second one. I didn't realize up front that the second one was meant to be a prequel. Otherwise, I kind of would have watched it in the other order, maybe. But I went into the first one, like, totally, like, I just need to soak up Indiana Jones, understand the general idea of the story. And it was a good, you know, I'm not saying it was, like, a bad movie or anything, but I was just kind of, like, in and out of it. I checked my phone a lot more, you know. But this movie, like, about, you know, maybe 10, 20 minutes into it, I'm trying to remember what the first thing was, but I just remember, like, I'm hooked. Like, it got me sucked in, and for, like, the majority of the film... Oh, I remember what it was. It was when they meet the... they go to the palace, and that assassin, like, sneaks out from behind the shadows to strangle Indiana Jones. I was like, you know, I was, like, on the edge of my seat, like, oh, no, please, Indian, no, don't die. And from that point on, I was, like, in it for the rest of the movie, and it was, so far, my favorite Indiana Jones movie.
What about you, Ed? What's your take on the movie? Now, since you've seen all four, what's your ranking of this movie, and what do you think specifically of this movie?
I don't know what it was, but, like, as a kid, I mean, see, Miguel didn't grow up with this, but I did grow up with Indiana Jones, and he was, like, the alter ego, or just the polar opposite of James Bond, or the American version of James Bond, if you will. All the hype that most people give the movies, like, I was all into. He's just, like, this kind of rough hero, like, but he's, like, an average Joe. So I loved it. I loved the idea of, like, you know, his shirt's torn, and he's got a machete, and, you know, he's just bare fist fighting these guys, and, you know, he saves the kids at the end of the movie, which is, you know, it's a lot of... Yeah, it's just all those wonderful tropes of the Indiana Jones.
We'll talk about this later, but this was a very, very... This was a very dark movie.
Oh, it definitely gave me nightmares.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, for sure. Like, the snakes, like, when they're eating the snakes, That thing really freaked me out. I was like, why would anybody do that? The main bad guy who rips hearts out.
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Moron or something.
Yeah, that dude Moron. Was terrifying.
Yeah. And that was, like, there's such a vivid, it's like, it's become such, like, a iconic look, but it's such a vivid look of a villain, you know, you don't really forget it. It's like flame and hellfire and, yeah, ripping people's hearts out, and, no, it was very...
It was a huge contrast, because, in essence, the bad guys of the first and the third movie were businessmen, walking in suits... you know, being evil, but it's such a huge contrast. See this guy with his bald head painted red and that helmet with the huge horns. So, yeah, it was really, really scary and really, really... Now, Spielberg said he got a lot of grief and it got a lot of guff because this movie was so darker and was more violent than the first one. So the third one had violence, but it had more cartoony violence than this one.
Yeah.
Did you two enjoy the darker theme as adults? I'm sure as kids it sort of freaked you out. But being older when you watched it the second time, or for Miguel the first time, did you enjoy the darker theme as opposed to the sort of lighter moments in 1 and 3?
I absolutely loved it. Like I said, watching the first one, it was good. But the second one, I was like thrilled. You know, like every step of the way. I thought there was legitimate danger around every corner, every trap or, you know, bad guy he runs into, you know, could be the last. My wife was making fun of me because I think like 9-10 times throughout the movie, I would just like gasp out loud. And she was like, you're really into this movie. And I'm like, I am. Like, I didn't touch my phone the entire time. I was super into it.
I'm proud of you.
And the fact that it was, you know, thank you, Ed. I appreciate that. The fact that it was violent, you know, it's not like I'm looking for the most violent movie to watch all the time. But it just gave it, like, more weight. More, you know, you thought that he was in danger at every turn.
Yeah. I guess it didn't occur to me. Yeah, as an adult, you can definitely see him. The darker themes to it, but there's still equally that kind of adventurous fun that continues throughout Indiana Jones. You've got the kid sidekick,
Short Round,
who you know is the luckiest kid in the world. but yeah, so in that it's still fun. Like there's still the adventure. It's kind of more. I don't know, secluded to this one area. You don't have the world traveling. And I think, like, you can tell that in this movie, being follow-up to the first one, they're really just trying to show more of the adventures of Indiana Jones. Yeah, and, like, Indiana Jones doesn't fight the Nazis again, which is why I'm sure they went back to it in the third one, after getting all that flack for the second one being so different. But, I don't know, out of so many franchises and stuff, the original three Indiana Joneses were so consistent in their tone, I feel like. I mean, that's how I feel. They're just, like, equally adventurous, equally thrilling, each in their own way. I mean, Raiders has some pretty startling moments, and there's some pretty scary moments in the third one, which I won't spoil for Miguel, but...
Thank you.
It's just always fun. I mean, it always comes back around to Indiana Jones saving the day. But, yeah, like, to Miguel's point, he definitely felt more endangered in this one, especially when he was, like, I guess possessed is the best way to... because you hate to see that, and you, like, the moments between him and Short Round, you really feel that kind of relationship, and you're just like, come on, Indy, come back, like... You see this story through Short Round's eyes, almost.
Right. Miguel touched on that. The scenes between Indy and Short Round are very, very touching when he's begging Indy to come back.
Yeah, you feel that kind of gut punch. You know, they've been friends the entire time. He says something, he's like, you know, Indy, you're my best friend. And
I love
just
you.
Like, he's so, yeah, he's so earnest and sincere when he says that. And you just feel like, oh, man. I don't want that kid. I want him to get, I want them both to get out. You know what I mean? I want them both to succeed. And you feel bad. You feel just as bad as Short Round when he has to, like, beat up Indiana Jones to get him to, like, come back to his senses. When he turns around and, like, sees him and he just winks at him, you're like,
Cue John Williams.
Yeah, that was a cool moment.
Indy, I love you.
Ed just brought up the music. John Williams for all four movies. I mean, what did you guys think of the music?
I don't think you can say anything bad about John Williams' score. It's iconic. I knew that before I knew anything about Indiana Jones. Ba-da-da-da, ba-da-da, you know what I mean? That just sticks with you.
Yeah. I can never complain about it. Raiders... I mean, all of the movies have the great moments where the tune or the Raiders march kicks in, and it's just very just powerful stuff. Like when, like Miguel was saying, like when he kind of goes good, and you hear that tune, and it gets all like ba ba da ba, and you know, like things are gonna turn out okay. I feel like it's maybe Temple of Doom has less of those moments, I guess, but it. To track from the score itself.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about Short Round a second ago, and it's got me thinking about how Short Round and the character of, I believe her name is Willie, are kind of like this, you know, double of a trio that is Indiana Jones and the other two. You know, Indiana Jones has these partners in this movie, and in the last one, you know, he had a couple of, he had a friend, I can't remember the guy's name, you know, that was helping him out here and there.
Sala.
And then he had Marion, you know, who was also there fighting kind of side by side through the last chunk of the movie. But in this one, you know, he had, like, companions throughout the whole story. And I thought that really gave him a lot to play off of. So it wasn't just him, you know, not that he scowls or anything, but you know what I mean? Just like being solo Indiana Jones. It was to have other characters to play off of.
Like, it's funny how he's willing to take Short Round, but not Willie on this adventure. But, I'm curious, Miguel, a lot of the backlash of this movie came from that character, Willie,
who
at the time had started dating Steven Spielberg, right, Scott, I believe, or something like that?
Yes, they met on this movie.
And, they're married to this day.
Yeah, they're married to this day, but this is the movie they met on.
Wow. And a lot of people, including myself, I mean, found her pretty irritating. But what was your first reaction to that?
Because Marion from the first movie is a very, very strong female character.
Yeah.
And this is produced by George Lucas, who did Star Wars, and Princess Leia is a very, very strong character. And like Ed was saying, what were your thoughts? I'm sorry,
I agree. That's exactly how I feel. Like, you come from Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Marion is just from the jump, the very first scene, the moment she's introduced, she's like a badass. She's carrying her own. Indiana Jones shows up and she smacks him across the hand, not because she's like being emotional, you know what I mean? She's putting her foot down, and for the chunks of the movie that she's in with him, she goes, you know, toe to toe with him. She can hang. And it was just like a departure from that. And while I like the idea of like there being a character that's maybe a little slapsticky or silly or funny or lighthearted, because this movie is so dark, it was just kind of like a bummer to see Willie be so featured and her be such a like a helpless, not even like super damsel. I guess she was a damsel in distress towards the end of the movie, but you know, overall she's just like a silly, wacky character that's not really adding anything to the script other than just humor.
Well, to me, the best humor in Indiana Jones is the subtle. just, it's like when Indiana Jones is climbing the side of the mountain and they're shooting arrows at him and he just looks over his shoulder and gives a, what the, yeah, just little stuff like that. But she's, yes, yeah, she's very slapsticky. The dinner scene, she's like fainting and...
The bit in the jungle, she's running around screaming.
Right.
Every little thing she runs into. All the while, you've got Indy and Short Round playing cards and Short Round's cheating.
Where did you find your little bodyguard?
I didn't find him. I caught him.
What?
Shorty's family were killed when the Japanese bombed Shanghai. He's been living on the street since he was 4. I caught him trying to pick my pocket. Didn't I, Short Stuff?
The biggest trouble with her is the noise.
Hey! You cheat, Dr. Jones! You cheat!
What are you?
Use the full car! No mistake! I'm very little. You cheat very big!
Look at this.
You accuse me of cheating?
You make me poor. No fun. Play with you. No fun.
It's fun. It gets a little much sometimes. I don't know. It's just... But it's a character that also just goes with the theme of Indiana Jones, you know? These characters are very up to type. You've got the evil Nazis, you've got the competing archaeologist, you've got Short Round, the sidekick kind of thing. And I mean, he always has some kind of fun friend and then an annoying friend or kind of like a screw-up. And then you got Indy, who's just the epitome of manhood, I guess. And everyone, like, you just want to be him in a lot of ways. But Willie kind of just falls into place of the annoying fish out of water, I guess. Because she never adapts at any point.
And she didn't need to go when he kidnaps her and gets the antidote to the poison that he took. But I thought this, How old are you, Miguel?
I just turned 30.
And how old are you, Ed?
I am 30, yeah.
So I'm almost as old as both of you. I'm 51. So I saw this movie in the theater. And there's a scene at the beginning of the movie where Indiana Jones, he's making a trade, and the bad guy gives him something to drink. And even I was like 13 or 14 at the time. And I'm like, don't drink it. It's poison. Mm-hmm. And I knew that at 14. But anyway, I digress. Once Indiana Jones gets what he needs from Willie, she doesn't need to get on the plane. She does not need to go on this adventure. She can just stop. She's not in trouble. She can still work in Shanghai as a singer, which is... So just her going on this adventure, it doesn't make any sense. She's like, I'm not getting on the plane.
Yeah, and just like leave her in the car.
Yeah, exactly.
Take her to wherever she needs to... Oh, wait, Short Round was driving the car. I guess, yeah, she would need a cab, but yeah, there was no need to take her on. It was like almost a hostage situation. I don't know what Indy expected out of it.
Yeah. And her character is inconsistent. Because she's all about money. But then she's like, why are you doing this? And he's like, it's for fortune and glory. Well, I don't see why you're... It's like she's about money, and then she's not about money, and then it's about money. So she's very inconsistent throughout the film as well, of what her motives are, why to do things.
Well, she was there to marry that young Maharaja to get all his wealth, but then I guess decided against it when she saw he was a boy, but which is good. We don't need to encourage that, Steven Spielberg.
That's crazy to me that she's married to Steven Spielberg. I never knew that.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, Ed, she got a lot of backlash for this movie.
And Steven Spielberg.
That's why he went back. It's like this perpetual loop in Hollywood where he did Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then he wanted to do something different, so he went darker. And people were like, well, this isn't Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard to, you're really pigeonholed. I mean, he really wanted to do something different. He did. He just got dumped on by everybody. So it's really, really hard to do anything new. There's more CGI in this movie than the other movies.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the CGI? How does it hold up? Did it take you out of the movie at any point?
Go for it, Miguel.
I was, last time we talked about this, I was saying it was so minimal and it was so, like, you know, appropriately used that it's almost like you don't notice the CGI when it does happen. But if it is, it's kind of like off in the distance and it's not something that's taking away from like what's happening in the scene. It's incredible the amount of practical effects that Hollywood used to use, you know, compared to today. You know, I was mentioning, like, you go see an Avengers movie, and even if they're, like, in an apartment building or in an office building, you know, for some reason there's, like, three walls of CGI. You know what I mean? Like, maybe the table is real. But here, you know, the effects being, you know, almost the entire movie practical, you know, the CGI, the little bit of CGI here and there, like them climbing on the side of the mountain to get away, it's forgivable because the rest of the movie looks so good.
They, in movies like that, and of course like Star Wars, I mean, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg were definitely the front runners of pushing all things technological back then. I mean, there was always some sort of spectacle with each movie. Like in the Raiders, it was like the melting heads and the ghosts and stuff, which was kind of typical.
It's terrifying.
Like effects, yeah. And then in this one, I think the most jarring part, honestly, for me, that stands out is like when they jump off of the plane in the blow up raft, and it cuts to a shot of them going down the slope.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's just clearly, you've got like a screen behind.
Like a screen.
And they're just like, it's pretty, but honestly, like when the, like Miguel said, when the action is happening, like you're so invested in it, you barely notice. But yeah, that would probably be the one thing that stands out to me. But otherwise, it kind of just fits in to the look of everything. You kind of forgive it for all its shortcomings, even though it's not that bad, honestly.
Also, when you're sitting and thinking, like, this movie came out in the 80s, like, this is, like, this was on par for the graphics at the time. And, yeah. Again, it's, like, used in a way that it's not so jarring. But I want to say that I forgot about that scene where they jump out of that plane is the most ridiculous scene of the entire movie, and I'm glad it happened so early on.
Yeah.
Because if that had, you know what I mean, if that had been the vibe for most of the movie, I'd be like, oh, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. But,
you know what I mean? Like, shortly after that, I was, like, sucked right in. I was like, I'm into this. I want to finish this.
Yeah. If that had been, like, the climax.
Yeah, I would be like, oh, God, this would, we would be having a totally different conversation about the CGI. Because it was really bad. It was just a silly moment. But everything in the Temple of Doom was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. The set of that mine, I guess, where the kids are digging, the whole thing, the fact that they have that, it's just like one giant physical structure with the water and everything, like, that's so, so cool. And to see the fight go out, and like that big fight with the big guy on the conveyor belt, too. That was...
Now, that guy in the big guy in the conveyor belt, he was the same big guy who got chopper blades in his face in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But that scene, with the conveyor belt scene, it's really, really jarring when this guy gets sucked under the wheel, and not only do you hear his bones crush, but you see him just, like, kicking when he's going under. It's a wow. Yeah.
It's dark. And, you know, with, like, you know, present-day movies, like, I feel like the internet and everything, I'm pretty desensitized to things like that, you know what I mean? But if you go back and you think about, like, watching this movie in theater at the time, especially, like, the sensibilities of, you know what I mean, the day or whatever, that would be some pretty, like, this is some R-rated shit. And this movie's PG, you know?
Yeah. Well, this was the first movie that pushed the boundaries to why they created the PG-13. when it came out, because it was so violent, but it, you know, it was Indiana Jones, so they didn't want it to have a higher rating. So after, I think it was after this that they came out with the PG-13.
You are absolutely right, Ed. This was the main cursor of getting the PG-13 rating. And look at it like this. This movie is 84. Spielberg's, I believe, if it's not his movie before this was E.T., which was 82. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are, a lot of people still had E.T. on the mind. Steven Spielberg, E.T., and even Raiders of the Lost Ark, even though there's that scene with the chopper blades. For the most part, it's just people getting pushed out of cars, except for the face-melting part at the end, for the majority. So, yes, they were really, really shocked. And, of course, the famous heart
ripping out,
heart ripping out scene. That caused a lot of uproar with parents.
I'm sure. You bring your kid to a movie thinking it's going to be one thing, and then the guy gets his heart sucked out, and he's, like, you know, screaming and getting lowered into lava. Yeah, that's pretty... I'd be like, God damn it, now I'm going to have to deal with nightmares all night. It's going to be keeping me up all hours.
Having to explain human sacrifices.
Right. Yeah, this is, like, some pretty mature themes for a PG movie.
It's all good fun. It's the spirit of adventure.
Yeah.
You said before that scene on the bridge where he's trying to, where the bad guy's trying to tear out Indy's heart. You thought that even though you knew,
yes.
Well, you tell the story.
Yeah. Yes. So, like, testament to Indiana Jones, The Temple of Doom. Like, I said, I started this by saying, like, the very first one I ever saw was the fourth movie. Like, I know Indiana Jones is safe the entire time. But, like, through all of this, like, Temple of Doom, the minecart, the bridge, they're hanging on the edge. Like, I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, is he going to make it? And then, like, when this bad guy, who is pretty terrifying, this, like, whatever his name is, and then he starts doing, like, I just saw him rip another guy's heart out, and then he just puts his hand on Indiana Jones' chest. I'm sitting there like, no, don't do it, don't do it. And I'm just like, I think it's a testament to this movie that it's still very much, you know, worthy of watching. It keeps you on the edge of your seat.
It does. With the alligators down below and everything.
Yes, I was like terrified that this was it. He was going to die here in this moment, and that was the end of the franchise.
What a bummer that would be.
Yeah, I'd be like, what was the third movie about? Who knows? Sean Connery, I guess.
Short Round, All Grown Up.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Well, we have our James Bond connection for our next one, yes, Sean Connery. Is there a favorite, did you guys have, what's your, is it something of a parakeet or a bird?
Oh, yeah, I am on my porch. I can move inside.
No, that's
it's like he's in the jungle, you know? So
yes,
it's just like...
Well, Indiana is in the... So Ed brought up a great point about this one. Most Indiana Jones movies is globetrotting.
Yes.
All over. And this one was condensed into the Temple of Doom. It sort of had a Die Hard vibe to me, the first one, where he's trapped in one place.
Totally, totally.
It's like, what I like about Indiana Jones and John McClane from the Die Hard movies is you see these guys get the crap kicked out of them. I mean, Indy gets turned evil. And unlike most James Bond movies or at the time, Stallone, a lot of those guys, did you like the realism of our good guy being fallible?
Yes. That was one thing that I always definitely enjoyed, and what bothered me about James Bond up until, you know, the recent movies as a kid, like, Bond would usually come out with not but a little scratch on his head out of these most intense situations, and his enemies would always just be beaten the crap out of, no problem. Like, pretty much all the Bonds up through most of Pierce Brosnan, pretty much. Like, he usually came out unscathed, minus Timothy Dalton here and there. But yeah, I always liked that Indiana Jones would get pretty roughed up. Like,
he was a real human.
Yeah, exactly. He, like, in Raiders of the Lost Ark, he has that scene with Marion on the boat where, yeah, he just, like, fought 20 Nazi soldiers off of a truck. So he's a little sore, and, you know, he's got all these bumps and bruises, and he just wants to lay down. And that, like I said, that rough look where he's got his shirt sleeve torn off, and, you know, he's just... Yeah, it just screams, like, hero and machismo or whatever. Yeah, no, I've always... That's a very specific like of mine. I don't know... I guess I never thought much of it as a kid, but, you know, that you mention it as, like, absolutely, I love that he gets roughed up, I guess. Yeah. It just doesn't seem real, and there are no stakes if, you know, you don't see the hero endure some sort... Yeah, you know... And you come out of every situation unharmed.
He's definitely very cool. And it's like, you know, as someone mentioned, like, man's man earlier, is, you know, you really feel that. You're like, oh, I want to be Indiana Jones. You know what I mean? Like, that would be so cool to do. Flip that whip. Hit that rock or whatever.
Now, one of my personal takes on why this movie is a prequel and not a sequel is we see Indiana and Marion together at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I don't think people wanted to see them apart. So if we set this before that, that way he can have his fling with Willie. What did you think of the chemistry between Kate Capshaw and Harrison Ford?
It just kind of goes back to that whole, like, how annoying Willie is. You kind of get the impression also through, like, Short Round's impression of her. It's like, that's one of those James Bond moments where, you know, Indy just gets a new girl every time kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, especially after going from one movie to the other, you're just like, oh, okay, well, they're just going to switch up the characters each time, or the love interest or whatever. But, like, watching that movie as an adult, I definitely just felt like... Indy's just trying to get laid, you know, like, she's tagged along for this long, and she annoys the shit out of him, and almost got him killed a few times, unlike Marion, who kind of just fends for herself. It's like, she's just like an accident waiting to happen, so, she's there in the middle of the jungle, so why not make out with her at the end of the movie? At Short Round's like, oh god, here we go.
And you reminded me of something just now. She was always vulnerable. Short Round is always vulnerable. Indiana Jones is kind of like this guy going through the world doing his own thing, and when he has these other two in tow, it really makes these tricky situations that much more so, because he's always having to turn around and make sure that Short Round is there, or that Willie is not, you know what I mean, about to drown herself or something.
I feel like the best example being, like, when they're going through the tunnels, and then him and Short Round get locked in that chamber. Yes. It's up to Willie to release them, and she's got to put her hand through all those bugs and stuff. It's just, like, high intensity. And you're just like, Willie, just do it, but
just
also it's awful.
It.
I don't want to do it. It's disgusting. They're like, bugs everywhere. No, I mean, I would probably hesitate, but also just, like, hurry up with it kind of thing and get them out of there. But yeah, that's one of those high stakes moments in this movie where I guess having this, like, silly character and then a young kid in the situation.
Right home!
Hurry, Winnie!
right, your other right.
Oh,
one on your right.
I'm inside. I can't do it.
You can do it.
Feel inside.
You feel inside.
Do it now.
Okay.
Are going to die.
It's moving.
Like Short Round being the one who set off the trap.
Of course.
Yeah. And he's like, "You told me not to touch anything. I didn't touch anything." And it's just like a great back and forth. So yeah, I mean, to that, I would say, like, yeah, it's to have those characters around, it helps put him in those situations. Not everybody's like gonna take care of themselves.
When they first get in that room, Indy can get out, but he has to go back for Short Round. So if it was just him, he could have gotten out of that room, but he has to look back. He has to go back for Short Round, and in doing that, now they're both trapped in the cave or whatever, the tunnel or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The stakes are really high because there's other people that he can't let, you know, get
yes.
hurt. He can get hurt a little bit, but, you know, that's on him because he's making this decision. But, you know what I mean? He can't let, you know, these other two that are just in tow be injured mm-hmm. or get hurt.
Now, do you think this is, from what we knew about Willie's character, do you think she really would have put her hand through all those bugs? It's like she's only known him for a couple of days. She's dragging her to God knows where. If these guys are gone, you know, she's...
Hey, so I could just go...
I could just go on my own list.
Now, you talk about a dark movie. That would have been dark, okay?
Yeah, that would have been...
like, let's let that kid in there die. It's fine.
Yeah, like, a pretty unconscionable person at that point. And also considering, like, she's in this very secluded place that's very ominous. They're walking through these tunnels with creepy crawlies. Like, maybe he's just the only way to get her back out of it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like the only way out is through or whatever.
Or just like Indy, she just wants to get laid at the end of it.
Maybe.
That's where that whole thing led to.
She doesn't want to be a child molester and go after the Maharaja.
No, so, she's like, no, the grown man will do, thank you.
Yeah, which is a good call, Willie. Well done.
Question, a couple of questions. One, what did you think of the connection, the chemistry between Willie and Short Round? And look through 2020 eyes, do you think Short Round is a racial character, a racist character? The way it was played or the way it was portrayed.
Like, stereotypical.
Yeah.
I've seen, you know, sometimes it's hard to argue with points like that, and then it's hard to not just, like, let yourself get lost in nostalgia, I guess, because Short Round is such a fun character and such a good companion for Indy. That, frankly, people have tried many a time to recreate in action movies, like having little companions, and usually the kids are terrible or annoying. And I think Short Round, and also having seen like interviews with the kid and seeing him in other movies, that's just the way he talks. So it's not like he was an American actor and Steven Spielberg said, "I want you to do
put on that
accent." That he got cast in that role because
that's just genuinely who he was.
That's how he was. See, like Short Round is Short Round in real life, or at least he was as a kid, and that's why Steven Spielberg cast him. At least that's what I've read and heard. And to that point, I feel like I don't think there's anything so outlandish or offensive to his character or role, especially the role he plays in the story. And they even have like a nice little setup to how him and Indy ever became introduced. Indiana Jones, that kind of character who, you know, he catches a boy trying to pickpocket him, so he kind of takes him in as a friend and a son figure almost, but not quite, because I don't know, Indy doesn't strike you as a good father, just ask Shia LaBeouf. But
I will say, now that you say that, I feel a little bit better, because last time we talked about this, I didn't really have a solid answer. I wasn't sure how to feel. I had just watched the movie and I wasn't sure. But the fact that you mentioned that, like, he auditioned as this character just kind of like as is and kind of just like walked on into the role, it feels for me a little bit better. It doesn't feel like someone maliciously or like unknowingly doing something racist or yeah. super stereotypical. And thinking about through his like just his many lines in the movie, I never felt like he was saying really gross racist things, you know what I mean? Or being made fun of in a gross racist way. He was, you know, simply just interacting with the world around him as kind of like a child would.
Yeah. He doesn't feel like a caricature.
No.
Of a culture. You know what I mean? Like,
he just is Short Round.
Yeah, that, like, Short Round, like, now, if he was, like, a little person and he was being called Short Round, that would be problems.
Yeah.
But, like, no, he just feel that, knowing that it's just this kid talking like he normally does, and he's not, like, spouting off racial, like, stereotypes and stuff like that. It's just who the character is, I feel like.
Yeah, and they also didn't do, like, lame jokes, like, all, you know, if he said, like, all white people look the same to me, or something. They didn't do that, which was, I know this movie was set in the 30s, but this movie was made in the 80s. Yes. And if you watch 80s movies, they are full of gay jokes, black jokes, you know, women jokes. It's just, there was no filter in any movie coming out in the 80s. And I am not a fan of child actors. I don't, for the most part, kids in a movie ruin it for me.
But I like
Short Round. I liked it. Yeah. I don't like, first of all, they're bad. And I don't like I don't like movies where kids are playing adults.
Mm-hmm.
And here,
they're like, they're more mature than the adult character.
Yes. And here, Short Round tried to act big and tough. But when things got real, he dropped that facade and, you know, and became a scared child.
Genuinely.
So, yes, for a child to be in the movie and for me to enjoy the movie and the child's performance, that's a big deal for me.
Scott, I have said that so many times. That is exactly how I feel about kid actors. Usually, they're bad. It takes away from, like, a moment, because you're, like, you're sitting there rolling your eyes going, ugh, here we go.
Yeah.
But when you have, like, for me, it's when I feel concerned or I feel connected to that child. Like, I feel like, oh, that's something from my childhood that I relate to. For me, in this movie, it was simply, I know I said this already, but just when he's so heartbroken about having to fight Indiana Jones. And when he says, you know, you're my best friend, I love you. You know, you're just like, he really delivered that. I felt it. I was caught up in teary in the moment.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed Short Round and Indiana Jones' relationship in this.
Yeah.
Now, as I said before, what about Short Round and Willie? What do you think of their scenes together?
He was a little sexist towards her, you know what I mean? But Short Round, I think, because he's emulating his hero, Indiana Jones, also kind of treat like, hey, lady, you know, you treat him with respect, lady, but he's not calling her, you know what I mean, by her name.
Yeah,
right?
You call him Dr. Jones.
Right, and you're just some silly blonde lady.
Because, again, we're seeing it through his eyes, essentially. But, you know, that's just how Willie is written, you know, because, you know, it was a or whatever, however you look at Willie, it's just, like, she doesn't come across well in a lot of ways. I mean, if you're in Short Rounds situation, maybe you would just be like, who is this person?
Right? Like, you are crazy.
Like,
why are you hanging out with us?
You are so loud.
But
you are so loud all the time. Yes.
Yeah, but you can't even fault him. It's just like, because Willie is really just one of his characters who, and I mean, I just might be embittered because I've never liked that character. It's just jarring every time I watch her. But, and I get it, but that's how she is written, and that's just how she's portrayed, so...
Out of all the Indiana Jones movies, she is the weakest female lead.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes.
Hey, is there a third female lead in the third movie, like a third new person?
We'll see.
Yes, we could tell you, but it would spoil things for you.
Okay. Yes. All right, well, I'll have to watch the movie.
Yes. And no, it's not Shia LaBeouf.
No. It's not Shia LaBeouf. I don't know if I can watch this.
Well, you remember that, like, Marion comes back in the fourth one, right,
Miguel? That's what I thought. I do vaguely remember her being there, because I remember her being, like, them making a big deal about her being there, and I was like, who is that? What is she?
Yeah. Well, like, they took a poll, and she was the favorite Indiana Jones gal, so...
I mean, thus far, yeah, for me, I would totally have loved to have seen her come back for a sequel where they team up again.
What would have been cool for the fourth movie is if Shia LaBeouf showed up and Short Round, his real son, and his adopted son.
I would have been surprised that Short Round didn't come back. Is he still alive, that actor?
He's alive. I just don't think he acts anymore.
I think he was a child actor, and once he grew up, because he was in Goonies. Yeah,
that's the only other movie I know that he was in was Goonies, but I haven't even seen that movie.
Favorite scenes. What are you guys' favorite scenes from the movie?
Go ahead, Ed. Oh, sorry. I've talked about it twice already, but I'll mention it again. When he's got his shirt all torn up, and he's got those two guys who come face-to-face with him with the swords, and, like,
raises the lost
ark. He goes for the gun, but it's not there, because who lost it? Willie lost it. Yeah. So, that's one of my favorite moments. And then... the moment where all the kids are breaking their shackles and running away, and then, or no, it's when Indiana Jones is like back to normal, and he's like, all right, let's go, all of us.
No, and all those kids being set free. No, that wasn't my favorite moment.
Because that's when the job is done. But no, like when it's like they're pushing a cart down the tunnel, and that light slowly creeps up Indiana Jones, and he's got his hat on, and then like he's about to have the fight in the mine kind of thing. It's just like pure iconography right there.
Like I said earlier, the first time, and it was early in the movie, that really like sucked me in, and I was like, that was really cool, was after the back and forth between Indiana Jones and Willie, like, will they sleep together, will they not sleep together, and they're like in their own rooms, like venting about that, and just before he goes over for the last time, you see like all these people painted on the walls behind him, and then as the camera kind of pans slightly, a guy steps forward from them as though he was like camouflaged and you didn't see him previously. And I literally jumped. I was like, oh, wow, I didn't see that guy. And it was like, you know, again, felt all that fear and danger all of a sudden about, oh, man, he's going to get Indiana Jones. And that's when I was like, okay, this is actually going to be a pretty fun film.
Yeah.
That and just the crushing him and Short Round and Willie all in the tunnel, where the back and forth of she's gonna, you know, she's scared of the bugs, and he's like, Willie, we're about to die. And the thing like goes through his hat.
Yeah.
You know, and like so close to his face. And, you know, that's like, that's not how I want to go. And this movie has a lot of, that's not how I want to go. You know what I mean? Lava, fire.
It's a lot of skeletons. So, you know, a lot of people went that way before that.
And it was not good.
Yeah.
Like he yanks that skull down and wedges the door with the skull. You're like, what if that was my skull? That would be terrible. Yes. Like, desecrate me like this. Yeah, no, it was, there's a lot of good moments, and those two were just some of my faves.
Yeah.
It was a little moment when they were doing the mine cart chase, and it's like, it's a subtle humor. Indiana Jones is like, we have to break, we gotta outrun them, and then they almost tip off, and he goes, all right, here, you take the break.
Yeah.
I love And I love subtle humor in these movies, which is why we said before the slapstickiness of Kate Capshaw didn't really, it was sort of like sticking a Three Stooges bit in the middle of Casablanca.
No, no. He's looking at you, kid.
Totally, yeah. It was like two different films. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it just didn't quite go together.
Harrison Ford is always so subtle in his humor, like, because he just plays everything so cool. So, you know, all his little quips and stuff about Willie, it's just so funny to see him. And then, like, when he's arguing back and forth with Short Round, too, it's just fun.
More cooler, Indiana Jones, Han Solo.
Ooh. I know my answer.
Okay, go ahead.
I think I like Indiana Jones better than Han Solo. And I'm generally like a sci-fi guy. Like, I like science fiction, you know, fun space movies. But the Star Wars movies are not my jam. I am just like, I'm totally out of them. I missed the window, and therefore I'm just like not, like, I don't have that nostalgia factor at all for me. So Han Solo, while like I get his character, and yes, he's cool in the movies, I really enjoyed Indiana Jones like 10 times more.
Yeah, I agree. Indiana Jones is just kind of the epitome. Like, I love Han Solo and stuff, but he's like a smaller part of a much bigger story. I mean, whilst he's like, nobody else could really play him as good as Harrison Ford.
Totally.
Like, Indiana Jones is Indiana Jones. He is the epitome of the action hero. It's definitely Indy for me. And his iconography throughout those first three movies are just kind of embedded in your mind. There's so many heroic moments matched with John Williams' score. It's just a pretty unforgettable kind of character.
Speaking of, because of John Williams' score, if you hear the score for Star Wars, you think of Star Wars. But when you think of the score of Indiana Jones, you think of the hat and the whip and the...
That's right.
You think of the man. Star Wars, you think of the franchise. Indiana Jones, you think of the man.
Yeah, totally. Han Solo doesn't even really have his own theme. In the movies, he has one that they share with Leia. It's like the love theme between them, and that's it. So, yeah, it's definitely just from top to toe, everything about Indiana Jones is definitely more iconic.
Yeah, because I believe it's Indy's theme. It's like that theme
solidifies it.
That's Indy's theme, man. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I had a great time watching this movie. I'm definitely looking forward to rounding it out, finishing the third, so I have like a good clear picture of this trilogy.
You will not be disappointed in the third. It's a very good movie.
When we talked about it last time, like, you know, the second one, it stands out to me right now. It's my favorite. And so often in trilogies today, it's really hard to nail that landing, you know what I mean, that third movie. So I'm looking forward to that one. It comes with high praise, so.
Before it reopened, it was, you know, it treads on similar territory with Nazis, but it was also just kind of like the perfect ending for Indiana Jones. Like, literally, the final shot, and I'm not going to spoil it, but the final shot of the movie is so perfect.
You're going to have a lump. When you see that final shot, Miguel, you're going to have a lump in your throat.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. All right.
And if you don't, you're dead.
I'm cold and heartless.
Yeah.
Miguel, you have a son?
I do.
Eddie, a boy or a girl? I'm sorry.
Girl. Girl. No,
girl.
That's right.
Okay, so what age would you allow your kids to watch this movie with you?
Mm-hmm. Temple of Doom in particular? Indiana Jones?
We'll start with Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first one.
This might be ambitious. I'd say 5 or 6.
No. No.
At least the first one. The first one, because it's just the fun and the adventure of it. And Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. With as dark and scary as this one was, and honestly, like, there's, like, the kind of darker, not darker themes, but just, you know, like, the Nazis are not, like, something to just, like, you know, sunshine and rainbows, you know what I mean?
Sure, sure, sure.
So I would probably, if we started the franchise and we were like, we're going to do an Indiana Jones marathon, I would probably, like, 10 seems like an appropriate age for, like, a boy, you know, he's, like, you know, can kind of handle the scary stuff, you know, and is still young enough to, like, really feel that excitement, you know what I mean, and magic.
Maybe so. I would do Star Wars sooner than Indiana Jones, because it is totally a lot more realistic and grisly, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just me being a movie nut and wanting to share all of my favorite movies.
Totally.
So maybe 5 and 6 are shooting a little low. Maybe 7 to 10.
That's a little bit better.
Because I'm just trying to think of when I first saw that movie, and I couldn't have been much older than that. And it rocked my world then, so...
I agree, though. It is, there is kind of an excitement about wanting to show your kid something that you enjoyed so much. And so I'm kind of glad I got the chance to watch these movies, you know, I mean, while he's still so young, so that, you know, I can feel a little sense of excitement to show him these as well.
He's not going to be a Star Wars fan, though, is he?
No, he sure won't. Sorry. That's not his fault. It's not his fault.
Sorry. All right, we're winding down here. Any last things you want to say about this movie?
2 thumbs up.
Okay.
If anything, Scott, I would say thank you for finally getting Miguel to start watching Indiana Jones, because I've been trying to get him on board with Indiana Jones the whole time we've known each other. And yes, it was probably my fault that he started with the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
But now that he's finally starting to watch it and slightly appreciating it, like, goal achieved, and he wants to watch the third one. So,
yeah.
But you did what I could never do.
All right, well, that's it. I appreciate, once again, my thanks to Miguel and Ed for doing this with me. Once again, an extra thanks for Miguel for doing this again after we screwed up the audio last week.
It's okay, it was fun.
It was fun, and just honestly, guys, I haven't. Last time I saw both of you was at Miguel's wedding. Congratulations on that. You two are two of my favorite people in the world, even though we don't see each other as much as we should. And I had a blast doing this. And thank you guys for doing this. And thank everybody for listening to the Dan Aykroyd podcast. We'll see you next time.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd podcast.